Words about book. Words about book. Just a book. Words about a one singular book. This is what everything's been leading up to. It's a poorly spoken podcast. I am, of course, as always, Nate Creed. And I am joined in this new year of 2021 by my co-host, Ben. How's it going?
It's been better. We've decided to christen 2021 in just the worst way possible. So I'm sure that won't curse the rest of the year for everybody.
No, we're taking all the curse on ourselves. If anything, everyone should be thanking us in the form of donations.
Okay, yeah. I'm trying everything in my power to not talk about what we're here to talk about.
What are we here to talk about?
We're here to talk about a book written in a simpler time by what I hope were simpler men.
We're talking about Edenverse today, a book we started writing in, I want to say, 2012, and we published in 2015, and then we've had like three different drafts since then of the sequel that we've since thrown out.
It's gotta be earlier than 2012.
No, it was 2012 because I was living in an apartment here in town with my then girlfriend. And
oh yeah.
And that's how I measure time, which apartment I was in. It was before January 2013, for sure.
Yeah, I guess it would have been. Yeah, you're right. It was definitely before 2013. Because I graduated college in 2012.
So you don't have an excuse. I was in college, okay?
I was in college when we wrote it. I was not in college when we published it.
I technically was. I was in grad school. I can keep riding that wave, right?
I mean, you're gonna prove a lot of people's points about the purpose of grad school being to delay entering the workforce, but go on.
I mean, I was working at the time too.
Then no, it doesn't count.
Also, I need to make brief mention that because you didn't talk me out of it, I decided to be as unprofessional as possible and drink festive alcohol on the air. I don't typically drink, so this is just a bad idea all around.
What sort of festive alcohol are you drinking?
I've got eggnog and rum. I've also
And you're eating a salmon sandwich?
Goddamn right. Actually, let me correct you. I finished eating a salmon sandwich.
That was like 2 seconds ago.
Yeah, it was.
Jesus, dude.
That sandwich never stood a chance. And I also got, because it was there, Smirnoff Peppermint Twist, which I assume is just going to taste like Listerine.
Okay, I'm starting to think that maybe you're more depressed about this book than I am.
I am going to drink this terrible alcohol and pretend like this is the greatest book known to man. I'm going to be, for one day only, I'm going to be those douchebag writers in Panera talking about how great their screenplay is.
I'm drinking coffee.
Trying to get focused in on this podcast.
This is not an exaggeration, by the way. If I don't drink 6 cups of coffee a day, my energy levels are far lower than what you've experienced on this podcast. Okay, start talking about the book.
All right, so about the author, Ben.
Okay.
All I had planned was to mention that Nate Creed is not a doctor. Doesn't have a doctorate. Just a master. Also, not knighted.
Yeah, Nathaniel Creed is a collection of non-accomplishments.
Except for the accomplishment of finishing this book.
It was an accomplishment.
It was a struggle to get this book finished.
I guess this would be the part where we talk about what the book is and how it was written. So,
it's like a collection of short stories, kind of.
I should say that I think the initial spark for this was something like you wanted to practice writing. I was like, you know, I like to write for fun. So we sort of came up with a shared world. And the goal was going to be we each write a short story every month as practice.
every month. Yeah.
And then we take turns editing and critiquing and giving feedback. It was just supposed to be sort of like a little, like, writing club almost. We were just going to write a story and exchange feedback. As time went on, I think we got too invested in the characters, and we started, I think mine, at least for me, the initial vision was each story would be independent and could essentially be published on its own with no context needed.
Sure as shit did not happen that way.
No, we kind of fell into, like, chapter writing. I think I made I can't speak for you. I made the mistake of, like, some of these characters were ideas I'd had for a while. And when I wrote their story, it came quick. Like, the first three stories, I was doing good. I was, like, one a month, bang, bang, bang. And then I ran out of the material that I realized I'd been preparing for, like, months. And all of a sudden, it became very difficult to write a brand new character each time. And also, there were, like, I didn't want to kill them off. Like, I had more ideas for those characters to do things. And it wound up that there was a story that wanted to be progressed forward. And from there, I kind of fell into the sequential stories that could no longer be published without context. I don't know how it was for you. We didn't really talk about it until it was too late and we had to talk about it.
Maybe it wasn't the best way of going about writing an award-winning novel.
Well, that was the thing.
The WAB Pod Awards.
The intention was never to write a novel. And the fact that some of the stories are weaker than others also stems from the fact that they were supposed to be practice. Like, we were obviously trying to write the best story we could, but we were trying to write the best story we could within constraints of a month to try to force ourselves to write more. So they weren't all going to be bangers, you know?
Mine were all bangers. I don't know about yours, man.
But we needed to allow ourselves to have some bad stories, and we were just kind of posting it on, like, a blog.
We went down the rabbit hole of how it came to be and what it was supposed to be, but not what it ended up
becoming. Yeah, so then the next phase is we wrote in that manner, eventually realizing we were kind of writing chapters and not independent short stories. Then we got to a point where I think we had like 10 or 12 such stories, and combined they had approached novel length. And we thought, hey, why not throw together an ebook?
Yeah, we'll sell thousands of copies. Millions, perhaps.
I didn't think that. You didn't
No.
Okay. No, we basically went with like a vanity press, Kindle, Smashwords. What was the other one?
No, that was it. Smashwords. Yeah.
Smashwords.
And they published to a bunch of other platforms like Nook and whatever. So
Nook, what's the indie one? Kobo? Yeah, we decided to go ahead and put out an ebook and try to sell it. And we didn't try very hard to sell it. We didn't advertise anywhere. We didn't tell anyone because, again, we were like walking that line of, I don't want to tell anyone I did this.
Hey now, I told a very small amount of people.
In fact,
Ben, now is a good time to bring up, hold on, let me get my alcohol all fixed up. Now is a good time to bring up, at the time that we wrote this, so we established 2012 to 2015.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I know where this is going.
I was dating someone from 2011 to 2015.
Yep.
And constantly asking her to just read and like give me feedback, and it was always, oh, I've got something to do, or oh, I don't have time, even though We live together, and I know most of her time is spent watching YouTube videos, so she definitely has the time. And I think she said she got through the prologue and, like, part of the first story, and by part, I mean, like, one page. So she sucked. She was awful. For so more reasons than that.
She didn't actually read anything you wrote?
She didn't read anything I wrote. Because she had to watch YouTube videos all day and not pay rent. And
but you're not bitter.
No, like, not at all. Well, yeah. Let's compare and contrast. A year after Eden came out, I just decided to post on Facebook because I'm an idiot. I don't know why I outed myself like this, but I was like, hey, I did this thing. Like, it would be a great stocking stuffer or whatever. I guess it was in July. I don't know what the fuck I said. The post has been deleted. I'm not going to dig it up. But one person did, in fact, buy that book. And later, she approached me at work. And eventually, I ended up marrying her. So...
Jesus Christ, you married your only fan?
So Eden has been very good to me, particularly.
Wow. I did not know this. Oh, boy, man.
And now we have a daughter on the way. I guess I can.
Does she listen to the podcast?
Sometimes, yeah. Hi, hon.
I wouldn't ever listen to this one.
I'm going to drink some of this peppermint shit, and then do you want to just dive into the book now? I can sense that you want to get this over with quickly.
Well, the only other thing I would say is that the editing process took as long as the writing process, if not longer. I think that was the first thing we learned about, like, that was actually a valuable lesson I learned about writing from doing this.
Oh, yeah, we met in person because of this book. See? Yeah. This book did great things for my relationships.
Yeah, but no, honestly, like, all the times we talk on this podcast about editing is not something I think a lot of new authors consider very closely. And, oh my God, if you haven't read your book at least three times...
At least, I feel like I probably read that book 10 times.
Each iteration of the book, like each edit, needs to be read like three times. I'd read it like three times. We'd edit it, figure out like what needed to change three more times. And it's just infinitely complicated if you have a co-author. I'm not trying to discourage anyone from having a co-author, but if you do, budget extra time for that.
Yeah, and when we met in person, I think we sat down and we were like, okay, what do we need to do for this book? It was basically, okay, we need to completely rewrite this story and throw out this story.
Which leads to a gap in the continuity, which means we need a new story.
Exactly. Exactly. This tastes like melted candy canes inside of Listerine, by the way.
Good to know.
All right, let's just do this story by story. If there's any interesting bits. I don't know, I guess interesting, cringy, whatever word you want to apply to this. So tell me about the prologue, the one thing that my shitty ex read. Anything of interest in that prologue? It's just basically telling us about Ether.
Yeah, not really. So we had this idea for the world that there would be a substance... called
magic.
Ether, which
it's magic,
yeah, like, well, that's what ether always is in anything. Ether is like just a fantasy word for unobtainium or one of the it's trope. We were just kind of trying to set the stage with this. At this point in my life, I hadn't read Dune, but if I had, like, I was really going for those like notes. I should know what they're called. There's notes at the beginning of each chapter in Dune. Where it's like a fake book in universe,
right,
that somebody's quoting from. That's sort of what this was. It sets up what Ether is, how it works.
But we never did it again.
How it's going to affect the plot. Yeah, we never did it again. And mostly because I wasn't happy with it. This kind of goes back to writing under the restrictions of like a month. And also being in college and also like finding a job and things like that at the same time. I really should have found a similar document that actually existed and used it as a model to like construct this. I needed research for this, and I, to be perfectly frank, I didn't do any research. It's just sort of like what I imagined one of these things would sound like. But I was also young and stupid.
We were young and stupid and in college, and we needed the money. The sun was in our eyes.
So this version, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't ring true. But that's where that comes from, is because it's not really based on anything true. It's not really how a professional writing this sort of book would talk. Do you have any thoughts?
What was the guy's name?
It's like James Voynich or something?
Yeah. Did you base that on anything? I can't even remember.
Do you want to just take a moment to talk about names?
All my names are awful. Some of them were placeholder names that just stuck and became their actual names.
All your names are placeholder names until 5 minutes before your due date.
That's true. I would use the find option. Find all and replace all.
Yeah, I don't remember what the particular inspiration for this name is, but I'm the opposite of you. I can't work with placeholder names. I have to name a person before I write about them. Like, I feel like if I don't know enough about them to know their name, I can't write. You have a thing with what you say, like, weird names?
Yeah.
Meaning, like, not like kings and queens of England or Anglo-Saxon?
Exactly. Like Gabriel Vincent. That's a normal name for All right, let's move on then to Partners in Crime. That's
Jesus
your
Christ.
Story.
We front-loaded this book, man, with
yeah.
my shit.
Actually, the first three are yours. So this is the first one that you wrote.
Yeah.
That's production order. It's also the first story. I really like this. You tend to disagree with that, apparently.
There's several mistakes that haunt me in attempts to continue Eden to this day.
Yes, it says here, had the most impact on downstream continuity problems of any story in the whole thing. So,
yep.
If you would explain that.
So, this introduces the character of Dave, who winds up coming back very often. And Dave has a particular power that I'm not going to go into super detail on, because I don't think we've ever actually in canon discussed what it does. I think that's still a reveal for the future.
That will probably never come, but yeah, go on.
It may. Who knows? If you want an Edenverse Volume 2, go ahead and tweet Nate, because I don't care. No, if we do a Volume 2, we will write a Volume 2. I was actually thinking about, like, what a Volume 2 could be last night. And, like, you know how we never, like, subtitled it? It's, like, Edenverse Volume... No, it was Shifting Tides.
Yeah, Shifting Tides is Volume 1.
Edenverse Volume 2 would be Retcon. And I think we should just roll with it. Just embrace the idea that we're retconning a bunch of shit. But there's like some mystical force that's driving the retconning.
Oh, okay. It's you.
It's me, yeah. Yeah, this introduced the character of Dave, Jess, and Carl.
And Clarence. He became important. I don't think he ever was intended to be very important.
I kind of wanted... I did imagine more stuff with him. So Jess wasn't as fleshed out as she should have been. Carl was a mistake. I think when I was writing this, like you said, it was the first story. We didn't really know what it was going to be. I was envisioning something more cyberpunky.
I was actually going to say that. So like Shadowrun or cyberpunk.
Yeah. So I kind of wanted the character to have this device that gave him a super advantage in hacking. And we established this mysterious corporation and seeds and stuff. And Eden, of course, is the mysterious corporation that controls ether production. And ether is used as a fuel source. And it powers, like, crazy advanced machines that couldn't exist with like without magic, basically. So these characters were all from like another thing I'd been thinking about writing, but that story was more comic booky. And so in this story, Dave and Jess wind up, through a series of crazy circumstances, stealing Carl, which is an advanced AI, and they have to escape the company. And this is like the first half of the story is them sort of meeting up and sort of stealing this thing and winding up in these circumstances where they have to steal it and they can't go back, and then they have to escape. And it sets up a couple of things in the world. It sets up that Eden is bad. It sets up that there are these basically domed cities that are shielded from the outside world, and only the privileged few get to live in them by the grace of the company, and that Dave is sort of some anti-company entity, and now Jess is, by extension, stuck outside the company. I say it caused downstream continuity problems because there was a lot of, like, J.J. Abrams mystery box shit going on here.
Well, J.J. Abrams mystery box shit works until you have to answer the questions.
Yeah.
At the end. You could just keep answering the question with more questions, and then at the end, you've already got their money.
I had more answers. Like, I had answers to the questions, but the problem was the answers, when do they come out?
Volume 3.
Once, or 4. Yeah, but once everything started getting connected, obviously Dave knows quite a bit about the company. Why doesn't he ever talk about it? Why doesn't he just say what he knows? Because it's not time for that yet. is essentially the answer. And it became a big problem to try to justify why he doesn't just talk about what he knows. And then it became a big problem to be like, okay, what is his goal? Why is he waiting? What does he want? That's where I say it had downstream continuity problems, because he sort of became like, the action they took wound up being kind of a big deal, and it wound up being referenced in numerous other stories, and it just sort of locked us into this storyline that was not fully planned out.
That's fair, because we couldn't even decide if we wanted Dave to be a wanted criminal that everyone would know about, or like, it's a secret, it's on the hush, no one knows about it. So we kind of went with both somehow? Question mark?
Yeah, it was kind of like people who are in the know that he's hunted, but like the average public doesn't. This was the first one I wrote, and I didn't even know, like, when I wrote it, if you'd tell me like, oh, this is trash, or you got to do something else. It just kind of, you're like, yeah, I like this, make these changes, and I think it's good. And that's what we did, and then it's like, okay, next month, what are we going to do? And it was a poor laying of the groundwork for what would become a series.
That's fair.
I could walk you through the story, but we'd be here all day if we walked through each one of these. Like, so.
You basically gave a good enough summary. They meet up, they steal a thing, and then they have to escape. I actually think there's a decent amount of tension in the story, so that's why I liked it. Maybe because I'm bad at doing that kind of thing.
As a one-off story, I don't mind it. But as the foundation for this universe, it's terrible.
All right. If there's nothing else on Partners in Crime, let's talk about talent acquisition. Another one of your stories. This is the third, if we're going by production order. This is your third story.
I actually like this one.
This is my wife's favorite story in the entire book, and she was both upset that the next chapter didn't continue from here, and upset that the character never makes an appearance in the book ever again.
That's on you, because initially I had this placed much later in the book.
That's true.
Reordered the chapters.
I felt like it made sense because it starts in the same location as the first story, but immediately after the events of the first story from a different perspective.
I'll be honest with you. If we're not ever returning to Eden, this is a story I would take and rewrite to function independently. So that's something to talk about later, I suppose. This is my most cyberpunky story. It follows a girl named Ayame who is sort of a collection of cyberpunk tropes. Like she's addicted to stimulants, which is like a big William Gibson thing. Like everybody in William Gibson novels does drugs. And they're all like computer geniuses. They're all essentially William Gibson. And so she was like a computer genius who's obsessed with the corporation. She doesn't like being controlled by them. She's had a rough home life. And she winds up finding out about the stuff that happened in the previous chapter with Dave. She investigates it, and through investigating it, she winds up caught up in some of the company's machinations, and she gets stuck in this game to recruit the next quote-unquote executive. Executive was kind of like a joke title we gave to these like superpowered demonic corporate entities that the company employs. And basically, if you're an executive, you're set for life. Unlimited bank account, cool powers, possibly extended life. And in order to find their next one, it's some kind of battle royale with different contestants amongst the city. And part of the challenge is you have to figure out who you're playing against. They don't give you a list of who to kill. So that's why she gets recruited for her information science skills. And she has to choose to do that. And I like the character. I like the setup. I could make tweaks to it so that it had nothing to do with Eden and it would still be a good story. And I have more of it to write and I'm going to write more of it. So I don't want to talk too much about it. I don't know if it'll come out in another Eden book or independently somewhere. But yeah, it ends on a cliffhanger, which is probably why your wife is mad. Let this slip. I've been writing the sequel.
Oh my god.
I was halfway through writing the sequel when we decided to take a pause on that.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this one. This one functioned as an independent story. Because it was supposed to be, like, it is happening at the same time as all the other stories, and it could be referenced in the other stories. But everything that was happening in this was supposed to be kind of on the DL. So it made sense that it wasn't, like, referenced all the time everywhere. Unlike Dave.
Yeah, Dave. Fucking dick.
But yeah, that's, I guess that's my commentary on this one. Do you have any thoughts?
Now that I think about it, you had another story in mind. Like, originally, years before we started writing Eden, that eventually became the Dave story, is that right?
Correct.
You want to say anything about that? No? Okay.
No, only because depending on what we do with Eden, I may work on something like that again.
All right. No, I don't think I have anything else on talent acquisition other than my wife really, really liked it.
I appreciate that. I would say if you had to read one of mine, this one.
Speaking of masterpieces, please rise for the first story we are discussing by Nate. It's a story that Momo prefers the most to any other story in this collection. It features a protagonist that you love to hate. It won the Nathaniel Creed Award for Excellence in Literature, Science, and Engineering. It is the Alpha and the Omega of this book. Ladies and gentlemen, throw your hands together and bathe in the inspiration and awe. It's the Great Wasteland Train!
Was this your first?
This was my first. I wrote this alongside you writing Partners in Crime.
Okay.
I wrote from the perspective of outside the seed. And I also wrote from the perspective of an idiot comedy guy who dies at the end. Spoiler alert.
That's quite the spoiler, yeah.
He and everyone he knows dies at the end because they were unprepared. They're trying to like build a train, but do it in the, like the dumbest way possible. And I think I lampshaded that because I don't know, I didn't fucking know what I was doing.
What does lampshaded mean? I've never heard the expression. I don't
You've
know.
You've never heard?
No.
To intentionally call attention to the improbable, incongruent, or cliched nature of an element or situation featured in a work of fiction within the work itself. I called attention to the fact that it was dumb.
Yeah, like he was being set up like it was some kind of like producer's insurance scam or something.
Yeah. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, I do remember. Like, I mean, I read it many, many times, but...
many times.
Yeah. So, like, he thinks he's being super clever with this obviously stupid plan, and the...
It turns out he's just being stupid, and he's being set up by his bosses.
Yeah, the bosses are, like, running some insurance scam on it, and he is, like, being set up to die, and then they'll, like, collect the money or something.
Yep. Yep. The tone of the first one was even more wacky, and it didn't gel with the tone of any other story. Because it was just like over-the-top, stupid... It was Duke LaGrange, except I actually could get a chuckle out of it.
It was Duke... Well, I'll give you this. More shit happened in your story.
More shit happened in my 20-page story than in his 300-page book.
Absolutely. But
maybe his book should have been a 20-page story, or shouldn't have existed.
I suspect he has similar problems because he constructed that novel similarly to the way we constructed this novel, which is, if you didn't listen to the how to publish a book about a drunken ninja or something, in that episode I talked about how I sort of like felt for this book because it reminded me of ours. Yeah, writing it one chapter at a time. And unfortunately, you released those previous chapters, so you're kind of locked into what they said. Instead of, like, writing it like a novel.
Yeah, you know, I could feel for him. Of course, I just deleted my original Great Wasteland Train for this one. I don't even think I have copies of it.
I don't know if I do.
That's fine. It's not important. It's a similar story, but more stuff was added to make it workable. And hey, I decided that I would establish, especially in the second go-around, I would establish what the world outside the seed was like. For some reason, I originally... See, here's where we didn't talk about our vision, because you're thinking it's going to be like Shadowrunner Cyberpunk. And outside the seed, I was thinking like Fallout. So...
Yeah.
So we were on two different wavelengths for a while there, and when we tried to get back on the same wavelength, it was
I think we
really
just decided
messy.
It's both like different places or like different things.
Well, then I rewrote the description of Outside the Seed as like, wow, Mother Nature's really taken off, like it's a lush grassland, and oh man, yeah,
this before or after we drew the map?
This would have been before, but the rewrite would have been after.
Yeah. We had to draw a map to figure out, like, okay, this area can be, like, a desert, and this area can be, like, a forest, and this area could be...
Where the fuck are we? Okay, we're in this kind of general region. Okay.
And because we were trying to sort of keep the world open for any kind of story...
Which is what we talked about when we initially came up with the concept. We wanted a world we could just set whatever the fuck story we wanted in it. Which would have worked if we didn't then link those stories together.
Yep. That's going to be a recurring theme. We should have picked one or the other.
Yeah. Anything more you want to talk about the Great Wasteland Train? This
only that it gave us the character Alan Jackson.
Who became Barry Jackson.
Who became Barry Jackson. Which one is he in the final?
I think he's Barry Jackson in the final, because Because he had an assistant named Barry, but it was spelled differently.
Okay.
I was planning on writing a joke story with Barry, B-E-A-R-Y, Jackson.
Nate has never stopped playing this character. The idiot who built a dumb train.
Who died trying to build a dumb train.
That's been fun. Like, anytime, like, we recently played a video game together, and Nate named his character Alan Jackson, and it was like playing with Alan Jackson.
I had fun. You want to get back into that?
I'm still into that, so anytime.
All right, so let's just briefly touch on the Outlander's manifesto. You say it's cringeworthy, and you said you would have based it off of a historical document, which is what you said in the prologue. Anything else you want to bring up? It is rather cringeworthy. You're right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm glad you, you know, you had a chance. You had a chance to voice these criticisms, okay?
At the time, okay.
At the time, we both thought it was super cool.
Exactly. Had I been 10 years older at the time, or whatever, 7 years older, I would have been like, dude,
we need to dial this way back. This is dumb. Yeah, no, it's the same sort of thing. I was trying to do that, like, document interlude. Again, I was writing about things I had no experience with. And I did not do my research, and that is always a mistake. That's all I have to say.
All right, let's go down to Showdown at the Tidal Ruins, which is my second story written. So that's actually kind of in order. I was going to argue that this was the story that caused the most downstream continuity problems. Clarence was sent to Tidal Pool. Tidal Pool is where all the major shit happens. In fact, we called it Shifting Tides. I was very... Haha. Tidal Pool was not originally the important place where everything happens. In my mind, it was like some backwater shithole that they put him in as a punishment. We're getting you out of the way. Fuck off. But then it ended up shifting from, like, southeast to the far west, and it became the most important thing. And then we started to have to ask questions like, why would they send Clarence to the most important location in the story to pacify a budding and growing rebellion? That wasn't the intention.
You know,
it just happened.
It's like one of those things where, you know, if you tell a lie, you're forced to tell more lies to cover up your lies until eventually you're caught.
That's the story, right?
Lie was that we knew what the story was about. Yeah. Well, this, of course, established the character of Will, known last name Given, who wound up becoming one of the main heroes.
Well, do you know where Will came from? I wrote it in the notes, but so my idea, I wanted to actually start some sort of writing world thing with a bunch of friends in like 2009, and that just fell through. And the idea was it would start with like some local conflict, but it would gradually escalate to like world ending odds. Number one. And number two, I basically ripped Will out of one of my favorite games, The Illusion of Gaia, on the Super Nintendo. A guy named Will goes around to ruins collecting mystic statues to eventually... Like, it starts out, it's just some greedy douchebag king, and it ends with you in space on a comet, trying to stop the comet from destroying the planet, basically.
So
that's where I got Will from.
this is your Super Nintendo fan fiction?
It wasn't supposed to be, but it sure did feel that way after it was all said and done. Also, Will in Illusion of Gaia was a budding psychic.
This is also the story where we established that hitting Clarence with a car
is grade eight
is his
comedy.
Like one weakness. Yeah, it's his kryptonite.
Yeah, there's a story at the end of this with Will where I was going to use a car as a weapon. You're like, dude, we've done it too many times.
Yeah, like we got to drop something else on him.
I enjoyed riffing off of some of your stories. I got great joy out of that. So that's why I was like, I'm going to hit him with a car. And he's going to think like, oh, fuck, not again. Not, are you fucking kidding me? Also, for some reason, you think he's like trying to fuck his cousin in this story?
I had no idea who that girl was. He seemed into her, right?
Family friend. Yeah.
Was he was into her.
Yeah.
She was a family friend.
Yeah.
She was like family.
Okay, that you're getting a little weird, but okay.
No, you're getting a little weird, sir.
So I had a joke for that I was going to put in. If we ever do volume 2, it's going to start with Will telling some stranger, like, and that's my story, that's how I got here. And the guy's just going to pause for a moment and go, like, wait, were you trying to fuck your cousin? Like, that's all he got out of it. Like, all this shit with, like, magic powers and going into ancient ruins, and all he can think about is like, were you trying to fuck your cousin? The answer is no.
The answer is no. She was not his cousin. She was just like a cousin.
Like a second cousin. That's why it's legal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, it was a rib at the expense of a friend of mine at the time. Because I think I mentioned a thing about how she had a thing for like a whole bunch of different dudes. It was a rib at the expense of my friend who also did the same thing.
So right. Mature.
I know.
We love
this
to,
is yeah. 2012, all right? I was young and I didn't know.
It was only 8 years ago.
Oh, man. Okay, first of all, I feel like I've changed a lot in the last 8 years. I feel like I've grown a lot as a person. Second of all, this year feels like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Fuck. So I ended up killing Will's family at the end, and I wanted that to be like a big impactful moment. But, I mean, it would be for Will, but not for the audience because they just met these characters 20 pages earlier. If I had to do it again, I would maybe wait on killing his whole family.
Well, that's the other thing that's challenging. And that's part of why I want to talk about more short stories on the podcast, because if you can establish emotional connections in just a few sentences, that is like a talent. That's what Agatha Christie did with all those characters. It is possible, but that's like...
probably the best book that we read that year.
But you're not going to be able to do that like ad hoc in a month deadline. Like this is where like the book being practiced sort of does work against it, because it requires just so much planning to build those relationships. Speaking of people that are introduced and then immediately die, do you want to talk about Suicide Mission?
Yeah, this would be my fourth story. So I went through a lot of different ideas for why I wanted this story to be. It was always going to be like squad of soldiers goes into demon nest, shit happens, she's the only one who survives. Which I guess isn't even what it turned out to be. She was going to show up in my third story, that would be Manhunt, which we'll talk about here in a bit, as just like an introduction, and then she'd show up in this one. Ah, look what I did there. I cut that because I was like, I'm just shoehorning it in for the sake of shoehorning it in. And originally I was going to have that scene from Manhunt play out from her perspective. I'm not a good writer, Ben. I don't think I'd be capable of...
like if you had one thing to take away from this episode, is that maybe we're not good writers.
But hey, it's only 99 cents. Apparently, this was your favorite story of mine.
It was, yeah.
Can you tell me why?
It's just... I think this is one of the most entertaining of your stories. Like, you talked about you're not good at the tension part of it, but as somebody who didn't necessarily know where the story was going. Like, you knew that she was going to be the only survivor. I might have because you told me, but as a reader, you don't know that. And she could very well die. She could complete the mission and then die before she gets away. And also, like, the character, I could have been reading too much into it, but I thought you did manage to create a complexity with her where people hate her because she winds up being the only survivor frequently because they send her on these suicide missions.
Right.
But she doesn't seem to necessarily, like, relish that. She's emotionally distant, but she's never mean or spiteful. And I could imagine that, like, deep down, she's not happy that she's the only survivor, that she wants to be, like, part of a squad that sticks together and has that kind of bond and relationship. But, like I said, I could have been reading so much into it, but she seemed like a real person put in extreme circumstances who also happened to just be incredibly talented and good at their job, which is violence, which also makes for an exciting story. And again, she's fighting monsters, so it's kind of like the violence. The violence is free. you don't have to question the fact that she's killing people because she's killing monsters.
Well, she does fight against people, and then she releases monsters, really. So
right, but she, I don't know, I just thought it was an entertaining story from beginning to end. Like, the action was good, it didn't drag, the pacing was solid, and the character was interesting, and we didn't get too much or too little.
First, I need to point out her name is Elsa. Frozen came out around that time, but it was more it was based off of Elsa Schneider from Indiana Jones. That was my bad, though, for not thinking. I think this might have been the story where you're like, if we can't get out in X number of weeks, then the project is dead. So I basically did this as quickly as possible with minimal edits or rewrites. And the idea was, I'm just going to write a prolonged action scene. Like it starts out and they're pretty much immediately thrust into danger. And then it's just a breakneck pace from there. And apparently it worked. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, if you could figure out how that happens, you could channel it.
Yeah, let's make that happen again.
Yeah. But yeah, I like that one.
All right. And then one more, and then I think we'll try to make that the end of episode one, then come back for episode two. All right. So tell us about Salamander, Ben.
I wish I had more to say about it. This was just sort of a scene that I wrote stream of consciousness. I don't remember why I wrote it.
I think you wanted to show us what was going on with Dave at the moment.
Yeah, it was short even by the standards of the short stories, because it's really just one scene. I think it was supposed to be an interlude or something.
Yes, this was an interlude.
Yeah, so it's just one scene featuring Dave, Jess, and Carl. I actually like this because I was able to just sort of, for the same reason I think I like Suicide Mission, I was able to just sort of imagine something happening, and it was more, not to sound too douchey, but it was more like painting a picture than writing a story.
Hold on, let me fart really loudly and then just take a big ol' whiff now. No, I get what you're saying now.
Yeah, like I was able to just start writing, like write what I saw in my head and put it on paper. And because there wasn't a lot of like complex political machinations or anything like that going on, I just got to enjoy writing. And so that's,
I just got to enjoy writing, unlike all those other episodes.
Very much so, actually.
Are you telling me you didn't enjoy writing this at the time?
You get caught up in how am I going to make this fit with everything else, and you don't get to just free write. Free writing is fun, for me at least. That's the type of writing that is relaxing, where you just write whatever pops into your head, and you don't really care about how it fits in with everything else, and you don't have to worry about all that planning headache and all that crap. But we don't get to do that very often. That's the downside of writing in any kind of structured setting, is you don't get to do that. Yeah, this was fun. I don't have a ton to say about it, because again, it wasn't very impactful. It was just fun to write. I hope it was fun to read. I don't think it's available for free. Sorry.
It's only 99 cents.
Yeah. This is one of the bonus chapters, I believe.
Yeah, I think we made all the main stories free, and then we took all the interludes and made those bonuses.
Yeah, so if you want to read this, you do have to pay 99 cents. I think I still like this one, but I don't know if it's worth your time or money. But if you're curious, go nuts.
All right, so next week we're going to continue to talk about Eden, much to Ben's eternal sorrow and suffering.
Chagrin,
that's what I was thinking of saying, but I'm glad you said it so I don't sound like a douche. So that's coming up, and then next month, if you want to read along or just hear us trudge through it, we are reading Twilight, Midnight Sun. That'll be I don't know if that'll be better or worse. It'll probably be better.
I'm going to have fun.
Yeah.
I enjoy those books.
You know what? I've started reading it, and I'm making my own fun.
I don't actually think they're good books, but I like them in the way I like a bad movie, and we've already taken the stance with that episode that I will have the burden of defending Twilight.
Yes.
So get ready for my impassioned, very much legal defense of Twilight. It is a... I have a feeling we're going to be attacked legally, and I'm going to have to defend legally. So... I will be making excuses for Edward.
You're going to have to make a lot of excuses for
him. I'm hoping for a plea deal. We're gonna start off saying he's not guilty, and then we're going to see what we can get.
Okay, that's fair. I think that's how you do it.
Yeah, you can reach out to us on Twitter at WABpod. You can check out our Goodreads group. It's the Words About Books podcast on Goodreads. You can check out our own writing at poorlywritten.ninja. You can check out the additional show notes and commentary at blog.wordsaboutbooks.ninja. And with that, we'll see you next week to finish this exercise in self-flagellation.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Actually, if you're determined to find out who I am and what I look like, go ahead and download that StarCraft episode.
Oh, perfect. Even more incentive.
I kind of lost the thread of what we were talking about.
We're talking about Edenverse.
Thank you.